Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 8th of August, year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. See what's up with Pam Finley about this weekend's fundraising garage sale and other events benefiting McPheeters Hall. Talk to Brenda Cross about next month's Great Pumpkin Festival. Sharon Gaiman, Deb Smith, and Missouri Smythe will be here with news about auditions for this year's performances of King Island Christmas. At Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight looks like showers, low temperatures around 52 degrees. Thursday's showers likely with high temperatures around 56 degrees. And forecast for Friday looks like mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and high temperatures around 58 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Attorney General for the Cherokee Nation says he will appeal a federal decision to place casino land of a rival tribe into trust. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the move allows gaming to continue on the property.
Cherokee Attorney General Todd Hembree says the last-minute decision by the Bureau of Indian Affairs to place just more than 2 acres belonging to the United Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians into trust is not supported by law. The decision keeps the Kituwa's namesake casino open in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, which is also the headquarters for the much larger Cherokee Nation. A federal judge had set an end-of-July deadline for the tribe to win the BIA's trust approval for the land. The smaller tribe has tried for more than 20 years to secure trust status for the property in a busy shopping area where it operates a casino. The decision was made in part on the idea that the Cherokee Nation and the United Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians share the same former reservation. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
In the next 2 years, a major decision will be made as to whether the U.S. and Canada will continue to honor a 50-year-old treaty that helps reduce flooding on the Columbia River. Steve Jackson has more.
The Columbia River Treaty was signed in 1964 in an effort to reduce major flooding on the Columbia River. The result, 3 large dams and accompanying reservoirs were built in British Columbia to hold back spring runoff and reduce flooding downstream in the U.S. In exchange, the United States sends a share of electrical power to Canada each year, valued at up to $300 million. While there's no expiration date, either party can withdraw from the treaty in 2024, but they need to give a 10-year notice. So now both countries are examining the pact to determine if it is in their best interest to continue. One major concern is the impact on endangered salmon, which were not considered when the treaty was inked in 1964. Paul Lemley is the director of the Columbia Intertribal Fish Commission, which represents Native American tribes.
What we'd like to see is more water for the salmon in terms of getting them out of the system quicker. And it will require us to have a little bit more, to accept a little bit more risk in flooding in lower river locations.
Lemley says the idea is that more water could be flushed downstream in springtime to ensure more juvenile salmon make it to the sea. But Lemley's also concerned with other factors that could result from the Canadians operating their upstream dams any way they want if they were to abrogate the treaty. For one, he worries that the U.S. would have to lower all its reservoirs on the river to deal with spring flooding.
So there are a lot of cultural resources issues, resident fish issues, and also water transmission through the whole system. It'll change a lot.
The Bonneville Power Administration and Corps of Engineers are taking public comment on the current treaty before they make a recommendation to the U.S. State Department of the treaty's future. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson in Spokane.
The National Park Service awards more than $1 million in grants to help museums and tribes across the country. The funding will help implement the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA. NAGPRA assists in the return of human remains and cultural objects to Native people. 21 recipients have been funded to support projects, while 10 recipients were awarded for costs associated with the return of items. The National Park Service made the grant announcements last week. Services were held Tuesday for one of the eldest founding members of the American Indian Center in Chicago, Illinois. Angie DeCora died Monday. The Ho-Chunk woman had celebrated her 91st birthday last month. The Indian Center was organized in the early 1950s by the Chicago Indian community to assist Native people in the area. During this week in 2004, Anthony Blackfeather passed away. The Lakota man was a spokesperson for the Teton Sioux Nation Treaty Council and also worked with the United Nations advocating for indigenous rights. Blackfeather was 70 years old at the time of his death. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
And by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our first guest is Pam Finley here to talk about a giant, stupendous, humongous McPheeters Hall garage sale. Pam, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Delighted. Thank you.
First things first, where is it and when is it?
It is at McPheeters Hall, which is on Gold Street between 3rd and 4th downtown. It's this Saturday from 8:30 in the morning till noon. We're going to have lots of stuff. We'll be getting stuff through Friday, but when I looked Tuesday, there was a lot of furniture. There were some, it's a small chest of drawers, a couple desk chairs, an inlaid small jewelry table, and I must say, six folding chairs that I've never seen the like of before. They look like regular wooden chairs with wooden backs and regular seats, but they fold down into something that's like 18 by 18. I'm entranced with them. I'm not going to get them, but I haven't seen so interesting furniture since I saw Thomas Jefferson's rotating bookcase at Monticello. Yeah. They're really interesting. And also have sports equipment, ski poles, ice skates, bike helmets, tennis rackets, school supplies, binders, an oil lamp, household goods, Christmas decorations, bedding, that sort of thing, pillows, blankets, baskets, a bulletin board, silk flowers, games, magic cards, and just from all the exhausting shopping, you can have coffee and muffins, too. So.
And will the proceeds benefit?
The proceeds will benefit the Let's Get Cookin' campaign.
That's a good idea?
Yes, it is a good idea. We have an unfinished kitchen right next to McPheeters Hall, and people have actually been using both McPheeters and the nearby conference room for food events, but they have to prepare the food off-site and then bring it on and then take the dishes off-site and wash them. So we need a kitchen. Also, the Glory Hole would like to have a backup kitchen. They've told us that that this could be. Nonprofits need to be able to hold their spaghetti feeds, things like that, receptions for after music events. There are even caterers who would want to use it to make food to deliver for, like, the food carts. So we need a kitchen there. We've asked for a bid. We're trying to get a firm one at this point, but based on previous numbers that we've been given, it's probably going to cost somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000 to do this, which is a lot of money. But the big expense is for the Class 1 hood, which costs over $50,000 itself, and which you have to have if you're going to have a kitchen that produces food that even is for a spaghetti feed. If you're feeding the public, you have to have one, and they're expensive. So, fortunately, the good news is we have an anonymous donor, a member of the community, very generous, very kind, who has offered to match up to $50,000 of individual contributions, and we'll try to make up the rest of the money from events and things like that, and perhaps grants. So that's our plan, and we really want to get all the money done by the end of the year because let's get cooking, you know.
You're
we
hungry.
Need it now.
Again, this is in McPheeters Hall on Saturday from what hours?
Yes. It's from 8:30 in the morning till noon.
And if you got your breakfast, do you have food there and coffee too?
Yeah, there'll be some muffins and coffee just for people to.
You know. And you mentioned other events?
Yes, we were planning other events. The next one after this garage sale will be on September 1st. It's a Saturday. It's the Saturday of Labor Day, but we figure, hey, people are coming back into town for school and such. And it is I think its official name is the First Annual Friends of Forth and Gold Spectacular. Part of it will be Theater in the Rough previewing some things that it'll be doing this year. And part of it will be some of the best singers in town, really. I'm not all of them, of course, but some really great ones. Dan and Kathleen Wayne, Patricia Hall, Mark Calvert, Philippe Damerval, Jay Query, Cheryl and Brett Crawford are going to sing. Tom Loker has kindly offered to play the piano during the intermission, at which time there will also be a dessert auction and nibbles and just general milling about. What we're hoping to do, we're actually hoping to sell 200 tickets at $50 a piece, which is expensive, but this is a fundraiser for the kitchen, and actually you'll see some great talent, too. We're hoping to have half the audience down in McFeeters and half up in the church listening to the music, and then after the intermission, they'll switch. The audience will switch, because we think it's really an interesting thing to do, to have two events going on at once, two related events going on at once. So we're going to do that. And then a week later, during First Friday on September 7th, the Mustard Seed will be holding an art sale at Holy Trinity, again with the proceeds to go to the kitchen. And it will be not just art, but also I think there are some old china and antiques and things like that that one of our parishioners donated, and it's kind of a lifetime worth of really very nice stuff. So those are the events that are upcoming, and as I say, we'll be happy to take any donations and or come to the events too. But certainly the garage sale is a nice way to support this and get some wonderful stuff for yourself.
Yeah, people are listening and wondering, why are you doing all this fundraising for? Is it because there was an unfortunate fire a few years ago?
Yes, March 12, 2006, a date that's burned into my mind, so to speak. The church burned down, and McFeeters all burned down. And when we rebuilt, we realized that we could build the church with kind of the money we had, but that if we were going to rebuild McFeeters, we were going to have to go to the community and foundations. And we did, and the community was very supportive, and both Rasmussen and M.J. Murdoch and the were very supportive. So we got everything done but the kitchen, and this is the last push for that.
All right, Pam Finley, thank you for coming by. Is there anything
you'd
like to add?
Much.
Is there any mailing address people can mail a donation to?
Let's see. I think the mailing address is now 415 4th Street. It changed. If you want to call for information, it's 586-3532. I think actually it's in the phone book under Holy Trinity. And this week, I think the office is only going to be open from 12 to 2 because our regular person's out of town. But please feel free to call, mail a donation, come see us anytime. Thank you.
And thank you for coming
thank
by.
You.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 8th of August, 2012. It's the anniversary of the great train robbery, 1963. A Royal Mail train bound from Glasgow to London stopped before dawn by an unexpected red signal on the line. And when the conductor stopped the train to investigate, 15 men in ski masks armed with iron bars boarded the train and collected 124 sacks of banknotes worth well over £2 million. They went to a farmhouse about 30 miles away where they divided the money, but police were able to recover the fingerprints of all of them. 12 of the 15 captured and tried within 6 months, but shortly after the trial, two of them, Ronnie Biggs and Charlie Wilson, escaped prison, fled to Paris, had plastic surgery to change their appearance. The other three, including the mastermind Bruce Reynolds, also evaded the police for several years, but eventually all of the robbers were captured. It was on this date in 2000 the Confederate submarine H.L. Hunley was raised from the bottom of Charleston Harbor, where it had lain since February 1864. The Hunley was about 40 feet long. It was 4 feet in diameter, made of cast iron, propelled through the water by the means of a hand-cranked propeller. It carried a crew of 8, 7 to turn the propeller, 1 to steer. The Hunley was out to sink a Union warship, the Housatonic, which was guarding the entrance to Charleston Harbor. And it was successful. It launched a torpedo, and the Housatonic sank. But something happened to the Hunley, and it sank too. The wreck was found in 1995, about 100 yards from the wreck of the Housatonic, and on this date it was brought up. And it was on this date in 1929 The dirigible, the Graf Zeppelin, took off from Lakehurst, New Jersey, on a round-the-world flight. The flight took just over 21 days. There were 61 passengers and crew on board, 60 men and one woman, Lady Grace Drummond Hay, a journalist who became the first woman to fly around the world. Before the Graf Zeppelin flew around the world, it had become the first commercial passenger ship to fly across the Atlantic Ocean. It flew a scientific mission over the North Pole, flew passengers back and forth across the Atlantic, but when its sister ship, the Hindenburg, went up in flames in 1937, the age of the giant dirigibles came to an end. Here's a poem for today by Maxine Kuhlman, entitled In the Moment. Some days the pond wears a glaze of yellow pollen, some days it is clean swept. The trout leap up, feasting on insects. A modest size, it sits like a soup tureen in a surround of white pine, where Rosie, 14 pounds, some sort of rescued terrier, part bat, the ears, part anteater, the nose, shyly paddles in the shallows for salamanders, frogs, and little painted turtles. She logged 10 years down south in a kennel, secured in a crate at night. Her heart murmur will carry her off, no one can say when. Meanwhile, she is wrapped in the moment. Our hearts leap up, observing. Dogs live in the moment, pursuing that brilliant dragonfly called pleasure. Only we, sunstruck in this azure day, must drag along the backpacks of our past, must peer into the bottom muck of what's to come, scanning the plot for words that say, another year or not. A poem by Maxine Kuhlman, In the Moment, from her collection Where I Live, published by W.W. Norton and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:17 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a June afternoon. Next guests are here to talk about pumpkins, the second annual Great Pumpkin Festival, Brenda Krause and her son Teddy Krause. It's coming up Friday, September 27th through the 29th. And it's Thursday, and then it goes through Friday and Saturday. Brenda and Teddy, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks for having us.
The Great Pumpkin Festival, let's start off with the catapult. Let's talk about the catapult pumpkin.
Yeah, we're going to have the great kickoff with the catapult. What I have brought in the studio is a 4-pound pumpkin. That's a smaller one that might be thrown. And it's pumpkin chunking or extreme sport. So my son Teddy is actually building a catapult. What does it take to throw a 4-pound pumpkin like this one I have in my hands?
Well, we are going to have a 400-pound counterweight made of sand, and the type of catapult is going to be a trebuchet. So it's going to go about, we're hoping, 400 feet.
Okay, about 400 feet. Now that, and how big is it? How long and how tall is such a structure?
Well, our catapult is going to be 15 feet tall and 16 feet at the base.
Wow. Okay. And that is for the youth division that goes to 17. And we'd like to see some youth as well as adults out there throwing pumpkins. Yeah, we got the idea. Last year there was extreme, interest that we wanted to see, not just see static, see pumpkins on display, but actually be able to throw them. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the big kickoff. Please try to contact us ahead of time. Check-in for catapults will be no later than 4:30 at Sandy Beach on September 27th, and a competition thereafter.
And the Great Pumpkin Festival itself goes on Friday, Saturday at the Jack.
Yes, on the 28th and the 29th. Take a look at our website. You can Google us, GPF State Fair, and there you'll find that we have adopted not just vegetable divisions, some fruits, fruits and vegetables, market quality, largest, as well as this year pumpkin carving, way off of pumpkin, preserves, that's a new one, pumpkin culinary was great fun last year, some art categories as well. Pie eating contest, you can't forget that.
Yeah.
That was a messy feat.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so that and a whole lot of good entertainment and fair food. Great place to meet everyone that you know, carnival games for the kids as well. So it's meant for adult audience as well as the kids on a Friday as well as Saturday.
What's so special about pumpkins?
It's the extreme challenge here in this weather. Imagine here we have such heavy cloud weather. It's one of the more extreme things that you can grow. So it's like extreme gardening. And watching things grow like that is just amazing. We have one pumpkin, Teddy, that you named now. It's in the garden, and you named it what? The big one?
Oh, the big one, which is actually growing round and perfect. That its name is going to be Holly.
Yeah. And why is that?
I don't know.
Anyway, it has a beautiful form, and no matter how slow it grows, because believe me, my garden has been in the 50s while other people down south are growing at temperatures in the 80s. It's just beautiful to see and nurture something that grows along so slowly. So not huge, but we're sharing that information. When we come together at this fair, we want to see put on display whatever people have grown. If it's an odd shape, it doesn't matter. Just bring things in. So please make sure that you take a look, you know, if possible, at the website, but enter so we can share that information, how things grow here in Southeast.
So how long does it take to grow a record-setting pumpkin?
Well, record for Southeast, let's see, we start seeds in April indoors and put them out about 6 weeks later, and we're growing just all the way to the fair, which is the end of September.
So it's too late to start now.
Yeah, it's too late to start now. But nurture whatever you have that's going. And some people, they bought pumpkin starts. They need to go out there. We don't have much bees around here, so you need to hand pollinate. So you can actually still get pumpkins now if you have the plants flowering. But take a look at them closely and get the pollen onto the female part, which is, has the ovary, the bulge on it, that will become the pumpkin. Yeah, definite. So, and a lot of good information. Last year we had Clinkit Potato Project, vermiculture, which is how you can compost with worms, earth boxes, you know, how you can have systems which self-water or self-fertilize, and we'll have similar this coming year. A lot of good entertainment. And who could forget the pumpkin belly dancer who shook her head and sprayed candy at the audience. Right, Teddy?
Yeah.
It was quite something. Do bring in preserves this year. There was a request for added divisions because it is a real state fair. We have all people from the community coming in to judge, and we need as many entries as we can so that our panel of judges can work on those and display that the beautiful entries that people bring.
So even though it's a month away, it's not too soon to start thinking about making a prize-winning entry.
Yes, most definitely. And have some fun with it. Definitely. Oh, we'd like to sing our little ditty. Right, Teddy? Okay. One, two, three.
It'll be fall, fall, fall. And Juno's next great pumpkin festival. Put pump in your kin. Come to Juno's great pumpkin festival. Keep the date. It's great. September 28th and 29th at the Jack with catapult competition on September 27th.
Start building.
All right, and you have any meetings ahead of time, too?
Oh, yes, please. We have just a few organizational meetings left. We could use a few more volunteers for small things, you know, like we procure pies, we decorate, we do all these little things that come together. Downtown Public Library, this Thursday, tomorrow, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., after that we'll be meeting just every other Thursday with a few meetings. I'll just rattle off those dates here. So tomorrow, which is August 9th at the Downtown Library, 6 to 7:30, followed by August 23rd, September 6th, and September 20th for the last meeting at the Downtown Public Library. We can also be reached if you wish to call. The event line is 586-1616. Again, 586-1616. Welcome all inquiries. And like I say, it's not too early to either start building a catapult, have some fun with that, involve a youth group. The reason the date is so late for this state fair is that we really wish to involve the community after they come back from their summer activities, everyone's so scattered, and try to involve youth groups as well. So if you're involved with any group at all, see if people will come together to put in an entry of some sort.
And it starts on the 27th with the Pumpkin Catapult?
Yes, most certainly, at Sandy Beach.
And the 28th and 29th at the Jack?
Yes. So we'd love to see you there.
Brenda and Terry, thank you very much for coming down to the station. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Huh? Do you want to add something? What's the most exciting thing last year?
Pie eating contest, definitely.
Oh, my goodness. And it was a mess.
How many pies were eaten?
I don't know.
It was about, we had 30 pies we started with. We lost a couple, so it was more like 26 pies were eaten in the end.
Yeah.
Quite a mess. And but the kids and the adults loved it quite. So one thing we need bakers to come together from Certified Kitchens. So we'll be talking about that. We need donations of pies for this coming event, and the pie eating contest will be on the Saturday. We still are looking for musicians. We're going to be penciling slots both on Friday evening, which is the 28th, from 5 to 9 p.m., as well as the following day from 10 to 5 p.m. is when the event is on the Saturday, the 29th. So musicians, we need a few judges for both crops. Master gardeners can earn hours, you know, where they need to pay back to the community time. People can earn hours if they need to do community service, including the different high schools sometimes need to earn hours. So please give a call at 586-1616. And thank you, Jeff, for having us. Yeah, it'll be fall anytime soon. And Juneau's Great Pumpkin Festival. Thank you.
For us to run and jump all around. Moon is up and the sun is down. Candles lit in Pumpkin Town. Round we go with the do-si-do when the seasons turn around. Round we go with the do-si-do in the hills of Pumpkin Town. On Icicle Hill, sleds and saucers take us still. We climb back up as fast as we will. Snow is cold and the air is chill. We stay all day on Icicle Hill. Round we go with the do-si-do when the seasons turn around. Round we go with the do-si-do in the hills of Pumpkin Town. On Mud Puddle Street, falling raindrops keep the beat. We go splish splash in our bare feet, shirts so fine and pants so neat, in big mud spots on Mud Puddle Street. Round we go with the do-si-do when the seasons turn around. Round we go with the do-si-do in the hills of Pumpkin Town. On Daffodil Lane, newborn pony shakes her mane. Birds are singing at the window pane, tulips open in the rain. Air is sweet on Daffodil Lane. Round we go with the do-si-do when the seasons turn around. Round we go with the do-si-do in the hills of Pumpkin Town. In the marigold time, hayseed or iceseed, oaksie climb. We eat that watermelon down to the Rhine. Swimming's good, swimming's fine. Lazy days in the marigold time. Round we go with the do-si-do when the seasons turn around. Round we go with the do-si-do in the hills of Pumpkin Town. In Pumpkin Town, Pumpkin Town, leaves turn gold as the wind blows them down.
There is an island,
King Island, King Island,
in the middle of the Bering Sea. A tiny island made of rock without a single tree.
The rock is so high, it scratches the sky. There live a top, people live below, in cabins covered with ice and snow.
And on this island,
King Island, King Island,
we don't have a mall
or a restaurant.
We don't have a bank
or a grocery store.
Just a schoolhouse
and 35 cabins huddled around the shore. There's also a church perched high on a rock.
There isn't an airport.
There isn't a dock.
We come and go by Umiak.
Umiak.
An Umiak is a waller's skin boat.
On King Island,
King Island, King Island,
it's the 25th of December,
the most important day of the year.
If the weather holds, today's the day the North Star will appear.
The North Star is a ship making its winter trip to the villages of the North.
The North Star comes twice, before and after the Arctic ice.
And we count on her to bring everything we need to spring.
She carries
dinner and clothes,
fuel for our souls,
earmuffs, jacket and hat,
fish hooks, scuba, medicine,
assorted tips and vests,
coffee,
tea,
potatoes,
flour,
sugar,
rice,
and yeast.
And last but not least, on board is Father Campbell, the Arctic Circle prays, who will light the candles in our church and lead our Christmas feast. The island is remote. Everything comes by boat, including Christmas.
Time is 3:33, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. That was the sample of the King Island Christmas soundtrack. Seems like it wouldn't be Christmas without a presentation of King Island Christmas here to talk about a new one for this year, Deborah Smith and Missouri Smythe. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks, Jeff.
So for people who do not know about the story of King Island Christmas, the story itself and also the story behind the play.
Well, it's hard to believe that there's anybody in Juneau that doesn't know the story, but we'll tell it anyway because there could be some new people. The production or the piece is based on a book by Gene Rogers, which was illustrated by Remy Nose, which is a favorite children's book now. And it's based on some actual occurrences with the people of King Island and how they managed to get their priest ashore to celebrate Christmas. And the way they did that was to work together to accomplish this very, very difficult feat. And once that book came out, it did attract the attention of, well, a lot of people, but in particular, Deborah Brevoort, who had been here in Juneau working for Perseverance, and she took the piece and wrote the lyrics for what is basically a chorale. There's very little spoken dialogue at all. And then got David Friedman to write the music.
Mm-hmm.
And he is very well known. Some of the things he's done are...
I know he's worked with Disney.
Yeah, a lot of Disney stuff.
On The Little Mermaid. No, not The Little Mermaid. The Beauty and the Beast.
There you
That's
go.
Right.
That
he directed
lovely,
the
lovely piece.
Orchestra.
So once that piece was completed, it was premiered here in Juneau at Perseverance Theater.
Right.
It has been done... Oh, maybe six times since then, and we will be doing it again this Christmas.
And sometimes it's done as a play, and sometimes it's done as an oratorio.
That's true. Normally in a play, though, somebody talks, and there really isn't much. It's almost all vocal, which is one of the reasons it's called a chorale.
And this year, how are you going to do it, Missouri?
Excuse me, sorry, Jeff.
How are you going to do it this year?
We're going to do it in an oratorio form, which is the way that we've done it in 2010. So we're very excited to present it that way again.
And how many singers are needed?
Well,
we will take a lot.
Yeah.
We don't. I think we probably need at least 20 to 25 adults, maybe 30.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a even 30, 40, 50, a nice full chorus.
We're open.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
When is it going to be performed and where?
We open on November 29th, which is a week after Thanksgiving, at Aldersgate Church, and perform that Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday matinee, and then the following week we're here at the Jack downtown, the Juno Arts and Cultural Center, and we open there on Thursday the 6th and have a Friday night performance, which is now we're into Gallery Walk weekend, and an evening performance on Saturday the 8th and conclude with a matinee on Sunday.
And you're having auditions this weekend?
We are. We are having auditions starting this Saturday, which is August the 11th at Northern Light United Church. And I just want to say at this time that I really, really appreciate Northern Light United Church. They make their facility available to so many arts communities. And so, again, we're going to be having auditions on Saturday at Northern Light starting at 1 o'clock. And then August the 13th, which is Monday, and August the 14th, starting at 6 o'clock in the evening at Northern Light United Church. So if anybody's interested in coming to audition, and, you know, when I say audition, I'm just going to be not just listening to your voice ranges and just doing a variety of things. And if they're interested, they can call me at 780-5225. That's 780-5225. Or they can reach me on my cell phone at 209-6835.
What special challenges are there delivering a holiday classic like this?
I think part of it is because there's so many things going on in this town at Christmas time. And that's why we're sort of starting early, but there's still conflicts with other concerts, with the Nutcracker, with just other productions of a holiday nature. So it's a challenge to get singers, and we've worked with some of the other groups in town to try to stagger and coordinate our performance time so people can actually sing in both our production and actually Bruce Simonson's chorus.
Last seen in Juno in 2010.
In 2010, right. And we were very, very pleased with the way that production went. And as a result, we were able to donate 12,750, something like that, dollars to the Arts Endowment at the Juno Community Foundation. And that was in honor of Gene Rogers and Remu Nose. And this time we will also dedicate a portion of our proceeds to that as well.
And someone else is also working behind the scenes is Sharon Gateman.
She is producing.
Yes, she's producing the production for us.
So we are the three Musketeers. We'll come up with another name.
Well, what special memories do each of you have regarding King Island Christmas?
Special memories.
Gosh.
Well, you've done it.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, when King Island first came to Juno, I played the piano for the premiere, and then Laurie Hagee came in, and so she and I shared that opportunity to play. And, of course, we had David Friedman, who wrote the music. He was also here for that, the premiere at Perseverance Theater. And so one of the fondest memories I had was to be able to premiere that King Island here in Juno and to just have everybody be a part of it. It was very new. Anita Maynard-Losh at that time was the director of the show, and just everybody came together and began to sing these beautiful pieces of music. And I know that each time I hear it, as many folks in Juno hear it, that there are pieces of music that they connect to because of the message that it provides and just the wonderful spirit of unity that it brings to the community and the story as well.
Yeah, we had posted on Facebook that we were having auditions, and Brendan Halterman, who I believe was in the show, you know, eons ago, posted, "Oh, I wish I could be there to do it again." People have a very soft spot in their heart for that show. Yeah. I really enjoy it.
And as Deb said, you know, there's going to be a lot of other productions on, you know, that conflict. And my hope is that we will broaden the spectrum of singers and pull in other folks who, you know, would like to sing in King Island, haven't had the opportunity before, and just to come and be new singers. So we welcome singers who have sung in King Island before, and also we welcome those who, you know, have not sung in King Island or would just like to come and sing in a production for the first time. We are open to that as well.
How many main singers are there?
Let me see. There's about six. There's Narrator and Olorana, the Captain, Father Carol,
Mary,
and Little Liar, the Umiak. So there's
My favorite character is the walrus skin boat. Who sings the song?
Yeah.
I imagine this play has been performed dozens and dozens of times across the United States as well as in Juneau.
It has. Deb has been very fortunate to have she has a wonderful website. If anybody's interested, just Google King Island Christmas. You'll get her website. And there she has, she lists when are the next productions and where they are. So you can see it is all over the United States, which is wonderful.
Yes.
And there's been a Canadian production too, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I've been talking to Missouri Smythe and Deborah Smith about the King Island Christmas auditions, which are scheduled for this weekend in Missouri. You want to give us those numbers again?
Yes, Saturday, August the 11th at 1 o'clock, and then Monday, August the 13th, 6 o'clock, and Tuesday, August the 14th at 6 o'clock, and all at Northern Light United Church. And they can call me at 780-5225, and my cell phone is 209-6835. And if I don't pick up, please go ahead and leave a message, and I will get back with you right away.
All right, thank you very much for coming down. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I think that's it. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for coming by.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Good to see you.
Kinds of jams,
snowbush cranberries,
highbush too, halibut stingfish,
caribou stew.
It's just a traditional Alaskan Christmas meal with our usual food, but it's a very big deal. You down home, cook it with an Arctic appeal. The food is mucked up, salmon and cheese.
A hundred of reindeer,
what did you bring?
I brought salmon, sockeye, and king.
I promised myself that I won't overeat. I'm on a strict diet,
but today I will cheat.
I'm gonna have seconds of that caribou meat, and Mary's a food, it's so creamy and sweet.
It's just a traditional Alaskan Christmas meal with my usual food, but it's a very big deal. Down home cooking with an Arctic appeal.
What makes your agoudic so creamy and thick?
I'll tell you my secret.
Crisco.
Crisco.
Yes, and fish roe.
Fish roe.
I'll tell you a little trick.
Take a little seal oil.
Take a little seal oil.
Add a little Crisco.
Add a little Crisco.
Whisk a little fish roe.
Whisk a little fish roe.
Whip it till it's light and airy.
Light and airy.
Then add your favorite Arctic berry.
I can't believe it. Seal oil, fish roe, berries, and Crisco?
Nothing but the basics. Easy to make. No fuss, no muss. Have to bake.
There's salmon, berry, nut bread.
Fried bread, too. Baked deer jerky.
Beluga whale stew.
Corned beef.
Bear meat.
Ptarmigan goose.
Did anybody bring the Christmas Day moose?
It's right over there in the big iron pot.
Olorana's moose chili, which is spicy and hot.
Thank you.
thank you.
Just a little bite.
All right.
It's pure whale blubber. It's good for you.
It's just a little hard to chew.
Is bloated, it hurts to the touch.
My pants are too tight, I used to wear a size 10.
Tomorrow I'll start my diet again.
It's just a traditional Alaskan Christmas meal, with our usual food, and it's a very big deal. It's got a long cooking with an Arctic appeal. I'm moving muck truck, salmon, and sea.
Carol.
Hi, this is Angelina. Tune in this Wednesday on Tideline as I chat with Daniel Kirkwood and debut his new releases.
She takes my heart, she throws it on the fire.
That's Wednesday, 5 to 7 on KRNN.
You're my lucky day.
speaker is Brian DeLay. Brian DeLay was born in upstate New York in the city of Saratoga Springs, a city with a rich history in war, gambling, and booze. At 14, he quit betting the ponies and began plotting his escape from Urbania. He left home at 18, seeking opportunity, adventure, and solitude in the wilds of Alaska. Brian has made his home in the Panhandle since moving here in 1999, and since then, to his great dismay, has found a niche in the community, the love of a woman, and a piece of land to call his own.
That spotlight's something else. So, cabin fever. Most people experience it, and for me, I'd define it as sense of feeling trapped or isolated, hopeless. It's where we reach the bottom, but hopefully we climb out. And in the face of adversity, we discover the greatest things about ourselves, traits and skills, virtues that create who we are as people. It's become an annual thing for my wife and I, fishing together on a 32-foot boat for 4 to 5 weeks at a time. But tonight, I thought I'd talk about my longest stint. It was roughly 18 years. Encompassed most of my childhood. I grew up in a large family of 8 kids. Now, I know what you population control folks are thinking, scorning my parents in the back of your mind. But people ask me, what was it like? And what they want to hear is that it was great, that my mom never did the dishes, and that the chores were always done. But what it was really like, I could describe as growing up in a zoo. My mother, being the zookeeper, she did a pretty good job keeping us from eating each other, keeping our cages clean, and keeping us fed. My father, the lion tamer, who wasn't that good of a lion tamer, which is actually a pretty important role in the function of a functioning zoo. But I learned a lot, and I gained a lot from growing up in a zoo. And I developed virtues and skills. The first skill I learned was to hold it. In a house with 3 bathrooms and 8 kids, if everybody was home, someone was in the shower, you could be there for a while. And I was that guy on the airplane sitting next to the window for 6 hours while I had to go, but I didn't bother the people next to me. I sat there and I took it because I had a strong bladder. Humility. I learned humility growing up in a zoo. My sisters were tomboys, my 2 older sisters, and I would occasionally borrow their clothes. And one sister in particular would occasionally confront me in the halls, junior high, and forcibly remove my shirt from me, which is a very humbling experience to be undressed by your sister in the halls of junior high. Another skill I learned was keeping my mouth shut, which my father would absolutely disagree with. So one day I was walking up the stairs with a friend. I was in first grade, and we walked past my sister's class, 6th grade, and I called my sister a slug bucket, and her 6th grade teacher heard me call her a slug bucket. And she was not down with it. So she called me up to her class, straight out of the first grade up to the 3rd floor. It's where all the big kids are, you know, first grader, 6th grader. 6th graders are pretty big. So she made me apologize to my sister in front of her whole class and kiss my sister in front of her whole class. It was a pretty humbling experience. So from a young age, I was itching to get out. And when I could, I wasn't going to stop, and I was going to keep going, and I was going to go to the farthest corner of the continent, furthest from my home, New York. But with years to go, how would I survive? 2 26-inch wheels. That's right, a bicycle. So Sunday rolled around, and I would ride my bicycle across town. I was going to the snobby church that my parents wouldn't go to. And that snobby church just happened to be 2 blocks away from my girlfriend's house, where her parents were attending the snobby church. So alas, graduation came, and I managed to stay out of jail. My great escape was imminent. And to my parents' great disbelief, as I packed my bags and made it clear that I was actually leaving and making a break for it, I left and they let me go. And looking back, only occasionally and when I need to, I think about growing up in that zoo, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world.
Brian DeLay recorded at the Mudrooms event on March 14th as of this year. You're tuned to KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sarsuna at 91.9, and Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. You can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9, and we're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Patrick Van Poole about Saturday's skate contest at the Pipeline Skate Park, and Nancy DeTurner will be giving us the rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. That writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. If you'd like to be on a Juneau afternoon or know someone that should be, please give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown. My phone number is 463-6425. Weather forecast for tonight, areas of fog with showers, low temperatures around 51 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, patchy fog in the morning, showers likely, high temperatures around 57 degrees. Thursday night, rain likely, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Looks like Friday, rain likely with high temperatures around 58 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to Juneau afternoon today, and have a great evening.
On 360 North, it's Alaska history through the life and travels of artist Sidney Lawrence in Lawrence of Alaska at 8. Then at 9, Westward into the 21st Century takes us aboard the MV Westward, an 86-foot excursion vessel launched in 1924 to travel the Inside Passage and said to have pioneered the Alaska cruise industry. At almost 90 years old, she's still traveling the Pacific. All tonight on 360 North. Find out more at 360north.org.
The military for him was an important experience in shaping how he saw the world. He told me that if you don't go into the military a racist, you're certain to leave as one.
The white supremacist world of the Wisconsin shooter.
It's Wednesday, August 8th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.